Alrighty. G'day everyone and welcome back to the Tripod Live podcast with Winnie and Clarkey. We are live now on Instagram, Facebook and YouTube, so that is good. A very warm welcome to everyone that is joining us. If it is your first time, what we like to do is recap the round of the NRL straight after the action and give you our immediate raw thoughts in a rapid style show. Before we get to all that and more, Winnie, my beautiful co-host, how are you going, brother?
Mate, I'm a bit concerned, to be honest. I was just quickly doing some rugby league math while we were getting ready to go live. And just come follow me through on this. Okay, the Dragons beat the Titans by 24. But the Dolphins beat the Dragons by 40. But the Cowboys beat the Dolphins by 25. Now, the Knights lost to the Cowboys by one in extra time, basically equal. The Raiders beat the Knights by 16. So if you add it all up, the Raiders are at least 100 points better than the Titans. And that's just on 2 weeks of footy. Are you as concerned as I am?
Look, I definitely wasn't as good as maths as it seems you were back in school. But, mate, that's rugby league math. You know, that's maths in all sport. It just doesn't check out at all. When you think you've got it all figured out.
We'll find out. Right.
When you think you've got it all figured out. Exactly. So what you're really saying is Titans by 100 next week. But no, once you think you've got it all figured out in footy, mate, it slaps you across the face and says,
to be honest, this can be more like rock, paper, scissors. And look, I think I said this last week. The key to winning bets in round one was back the team that had the worst season, because that was the last thing we saw in 2023. If you just backed the team that did worse in 2023, I think they covered the line 6 or 7 out of 8 games. In round two, what was the trick to being successful? Back the team who didn't do as well in round one, because everyone overreacted to round one. And, you know, the two key overreaction games that I pointed out was Knights looked awful, Cowboys looked awesome. If you back the Knights, you won with the line, right? In fact, we'll get to that game. They should have won outright. And what was the other big overreaction game? Dragons looked awesome under Flano, and the Dolphins looked like they couldn't tackle. And today they won 38-0. So I should have been on those. So I'm quite frustrated. I always start the show by saying the bet results. 2-1 on best bets, but it doesn't feel like a win when we lost the mixed matchup today and when I left a couple on the table.
Mate, we have got Uncle Tix in the house. We've got Zion. We've got Toby. We've got Colt on YouTube. We've got Sora on YouTube. Everyone's in the house. Thank you very much for being here with us. Let's jump straight into the round. Broncos defeat the Rabbitohs 28-18. The line was set at -8.5 here, so the Broncos did cover that line. We both liked Broncos here. We were just unsure of that line. And look, I go straight to the Rabbitohs in my analysis here. Cons. They made every possible error you can in rugby league, like just really silly ones as well. And the pros are they were missing Graham, White, and an Arrow, and they're only just off the mark all game. Like they were never truly out of the contest. There was always the theoretic chance that they do get back into it. But my thoughts remain the same on the Rabbitohs. Ultimately, they are downhill runners where they need things to be going their way, and they just take over a game through their spine. Whereas from the Broncos side, we saw a spine in particular that didn't require everything going their way. You know, they had plenty of errors as well, but you saw players like Reece Walsh come up with key moments that really mattered in individual tries. So that was the difference between the sides in that one. 15 errors for the Broncos. That was actually more than the Bunnies, surprisingly. So not a perfect night for them, Winnie, but as Kevin Walters said post-game, we know we weren't perfect, but the most important thing is to make sure we're winning at this stage of the year, and they got the dub there. Overall, a highly entertaining game for me. Did you see it that way as well?
Yeah, in fact, I was in the house with the man who used to be in your seat too, Alexi. Shout out. We enjoyed the game. Look, one other overall trend, I think, what did we say? All the upsets were winning or covering in round one. There was about 5 in a row to start round one. And then this round, the trend was all favourites winning, until today, where it was actually a couple of upsets. So to begin round two, it was the favoured Broncos getting it won. Look, as I said, I was there. Sloppy game, like you mentioned it, because I was actually shocked to hear the stat that Brisbane had more errors than South. The South had so many, but some of South's mistakes weren't necessarily errors, but still ways they found a way to give away the footy. It had entertaining moments, though, so it was still exciting, good crowd. I feel like Brisbane should have won this game by 40 with the amount of South's mistakes. It was only 12-0 at halftime. Felt like it should have been 24. Like Brisbane had a head of steam. You know, there's the moment where Cook gets sent to the sin bin, but Brisbane actually doesn't capitalise on that period of time. And next thing you know, you come out second half, quite similar to Vegas. If people recall, Souths were down at halftime in Vegas, scored bang, bang, 43rd, 47th minute against Manly, although then tailed off. Well, against the Broncos, it was like 42nd, 45th minute. It's 12 all here. And you know, and then it's anybody's game. It doesn't matter how bad Souths played first half and that Brisbane didn't take their chances. And you can't let anyone hang around in this comp. And even at 16-12, the game has still been stolen from Brisbane. And I think where all Brisbane's errors came was on the Souths try line. The amount of times that Souths wanted to give the game away and Brisbane refused to take it. And I'm talking about like Ilias kicks it into his own man. They get done for a blocking penalty, not once but twice, like an obstruction penalty, multiple errors, you know, everything that could go wrong. So, in fact, in the end, after Brisbane just could not take any chances or break Souths down on their try line, the try that cracked the game open was a fluky one, a fifth tackle run, kick inside from Arthur's end, the horror bounce for Latrell. Although there's a comment there that, you know, Latrell didn't have a good night, that's fair. And maybe he misjudged it. Or, you know, Latrell's so confident sometimes, he just thinks that he can pick up a ball on a half volley nonchalant. And maybe if he played it more cautious, he wouldn't have got caught with his pants down there. Walsh scores. And, you know, on Walsh, he's a special, special player. You really do appreciate seeing him in person, the way that he makes the others look like it's underrated, the way he goes around them. And then a Mariner class try capped it. Although Latrell, of course, scores like a 50-meter try at the end, it didn't affect the result, but there were implications. He got his 100th try. It pushed the game over. So if you've been on unders all night, you're watching bomb chances, you get the over on that final try. If you had Latrell anytime try score, which lots of people did in the SGM, and if you had Brisbane 13+, all game you're thinking, how is Brisbane not up 30 here? Brisbane's up 18 in the final kind of minute, but only wins by, well, no, sorry, they're up 16. And only wins by 10 on that Latrell try. So I know that that final moment won some betters some of their multis, but also probably cost a few as well.
I think it would have cost a lot of people. And it was really just a try where the Broncos quite simply fell asleep. Andy Barrett from Instagram says, what's the Latrell hate for? Is going good. That will definitely be up for debate in the comments here next. And as James Graham on Facebook points out, all the home teams won this round. So if this trend's continuing round three, if the away sides could be in for a bit of joy. But let's move to our next game. It was Friday night, 6 p.m. We were at Shark Park where the Sharkies defeated the Bulldogs 25-6. Line was set at -9.5 here, which Sharks covered quite comfortably in the end thanks to their second half. But I go back to our preview show and I think we were both kind of seeing this the same way where we thought Doggies would come out hard, try hard, and at least fight for the first 40. But in the second half, the class just, particularly in the halves, I've got to say, the Bulldogs halves really struggled. They didn't create much. They didn't control the footy well. They didn't manage the game's tempo very well. Whereas the Sharks all around the park were quite clinical and they were really a class above the Doggies here who just couldn't answer with anything. Coming into this game as well, I've got to say, I thought the Doggies were a little thin in the middle. Having your starting prop, Poasa Famously, knocked out off the kickoff was really not helpful for them. I felt sorry for them there from a football perspective. And I didn't worry too much about our best bet winning because, you know, it was just a first half line. But I thought 13+, the Doggies might run out of steam here, especially shorter middle forward, which is certainly the way it played out here. But we do cash our best bet, which is a good one here. So tell me how you feel about that and how you felt about this game as a whole.
That's right. The first bet was +4.5 first half. Not only do you lose Famously, he dropped the ball while being KO'd for the head clash. So it was instantly Sharks ball. I think, you know, one of the reasons to take Canterbury this week was they had no ball at all, especially first half against Parra. So with an even share of possession, maybe they can do something. And instantly, they're defending their try line to start the game. But in fact, they repelled Cronulla. Nicaro got sent to the sin bin. And it was the Doggies who scored first. And that was after another Doggies try was disallowed, where there's an offload to Kikau, head of steam to the line, and it's he scores, but it's disallowed because the ref got a bit in the way or bumps with the fullback. Like, there was no stopping Kikau. Like, that's a new way to lose a try. Obstruction from the ref himself. So, in any case, Dogs are up 6-0. I think they could have easily been in front at the break. A couple of fifth tackle options hurt them. And you said the halves play. I mean, Burton, I still stand by what a talent he is. But I have to say, you know, if you're looking at where the Dogs are falling short and the attack was not up to scratch last week nor this week, Hutchison's not doing anything at seven. So I think you've got to move to to Sexton because it's too much pressure on Burton. And Burton's so good when he's a runner, but he's having to organize. He's having to do all the kicking anyway. So what's Hutchinson out there for? Is he an extra 13? He offered very little. In any case, look, the final score doesn't tell you really how tight this match was, in truth, because not only was it it's 6-6 basically for the middle period of this game, well into the second half, then Cronulla only had a 1-try lead with like under 15 minutes to go, like 12-6. The cover is in the balance. Even the match is still in the balance. It's just that Cronulla really broke the dog's spirits at the end and ran a few tries in. Now, you've got to give credit to Cronulla because they stayed in it. They stayed patient. When they had to defend their line, they really did defend extremely well, and they finished far too strong. So they're going to be very pleased to be 2-0 and getting it done. But I do think if people didn't see this game, you'd think the dogs got smashed. It was actually a pretty good arm wrestle. So no apologies from me for that best bet.
And Jason D on Instagram says, that's cap. I can only assume he's referring to the kick out, no try decision, which, yeah, no one was stopping kick out from that close to the line. Tough go for the doggies there. And Cole points out on YouTube, I can't gauge the dogs. Last week they started slow and finished strong. And this week they started strong and finished poorly. That is... And then James Graham says, is Serato a dud? Look, I won't go that far, but the dogs that we get every week are different. And that's concerning over the course of a 27-round season where some weeks they're good in some areas and bad in others. And then you can tear that up and get something completely different the next week, which must be frustrating for Doggies fans there. Let's move to a blockbuster. It was Panthers defeating the Eels, defending their home turf there in the Battle of the West, 26-18. The line was set at -7.5 in the Panthers' favour, so they just cover that only by a half a point. And I thought they looked really improved from last week. And I think when we look for reasons as to why that was, a big reason was actually Mitch Kenny. They looked a lot more direct out of dummy half. Cleary got the ball when he wanted it. He didn't have to run the ball so forced. Like last week, he had 30 runs, but they weren't as effective as his runs this week. So I'm not saying Mitch Kenny is the world's greatest hooker, but certainly underrated. And I think what he does very well for this Panthers side is he plays his role perfectly. He knows he doesn't have to try to be Appy Coruscant. He knows he doesn't need to try to be Brandon Smith with scoots and stuff. He just knows who needs the ball and he does his job very, very well. I think that's a big reason why Penrith looked improved. The other stat from this, Panthers are now 11 from their last 12 at Bluebet. It's something we really overlook, I think, as fans, because they did lose the game to the Eels there last year in the World Club Challenge there, but it's a fortress. They are really, really hard to beat at home, no matter which players they have in or out, because some of those games were also over the Origin period where they were missing Cleary and Luai, and some of those games when both of those men were injured also. So I look at this one. I know we liked both teams, but we were hesitant. I know we liked the Panthers rather, but we were hesitant to play that line. But I just think when I reflect on this one, they suffocated the Eels. They wore them down, and that's really reflected in the Eels only averaging 39 metres per set, where the Panthers were up over 50 metres per set, and that's captured over the course of 80 minutes. So I think that's a really telling sign there. Unfortunately, we didn't get our better same game multi in this one. How do you reflect on the multi there, and how do you reflect on this game as a whole?
Yeah, the multi was crushed by halftime. There were 6 tries in the first half. And I had under 6.5 for the game, you know, to really see an arm wrestle. So talking about turning the tables on round one, remember Penrith were held scoreless in round one against Melbourne, and they looked a completely different side, playing so positive, spreading, enterprising. You know, you mentioned there the metres disparity. I don't even know if their forwards necessarily had many more metres than Parra. I think it was the outside backs that spread it well inside their own half. You know, looking at Tungo, he had a day out. If he had the game on Friday that I was looking for a week earlier, might have won the SGM against the Storm. But, yeah, he was among many Panthers outside backs that enjoyed the fruits of playing positive footy. Having said that, it was still Parra that had the lead at halftime. However, that was where their scoring stopped. And I also noted Mitch Kenny, 54 tackles. So he did certainly tighten up the middle for the Panthers, and I wanted to talk about the new rules, particularly the downtown for kicking, right? Because I've heard a lot of people saying, like, this is really going to affect Penrith. They would love to, you know, send that defensive line ahead early and then Cleary can get plenty of hang time on his kick, and then they're going to hammer you with a flat line. Now you can't do that. You've got to be behind the ruck. But Parramatta was famous for doing it as well. You know, they'd send those big body forwards down there early. Now neither of these teams can do it. It's hard to say. When they play each other, it's hard to say who's disadvantaged. Parra looked just fine against the Dogs. Penrith did struggle against Melbourne, which is why people suggested the new rules, but the new rules are affecting them. But I've got to say, the less reward for repeat sets encourages ad-lib footy on the last, and I think nobody does that better than Penrith. And in fact, the opening try is Penrith just willing to keep it alive, shift from left to right, and then drop it on the boot, and who finds his way through, but none of the Dylan Edwards. So I think Penrith are actually going to reinvent themselves a little bit, because you have to keep trying to find a way to get better, especially when you're losing good players. And I have a feeling that they're going to want to play positive attacking footy and lean into that sort of skill set, which is pretty exciting for them.
I think that's what makes the Panthers so exciting, to be completely honest. They can play such structured, fantastic sets where Isaiah Yeo is linking perfectly with the halves, who are finding early ball for dangerous outside backs. But then when that kind of crumbles and you shut that down, you've also got someone like Jerome Luai, who will step twice off the left foot, as you said, throw it out to the other center, who then throws it back the other way, and suddenly they scored the first try out of nothing. And that's what makes them not only exciting for us to watch as fans, but obviously super dangerous. Dan Levers in the house. He says, Dan in on Facebook. And Zach Brown from YouTube says, I think Para are a top four side. I had them as a top four side this year. Did you have them in your top eight? I believe you did.
Towards top the eight bottom? For sure. Yeah, I had them right up there, but maybe sixth at lowest, I think.
Yeah, I think he had them just outside of that top four range, but I don't take anything away from them with this loss. Panthers are a really tough side to beat at home, as we touched on. Let's go to the nation's capital, where the Raiders defended their house against Benji's West Tigers, 32-12. The line was set at -7.5 in this one. And I think a part of that was somewhat of the unknown element of what are we going to see from a Tigers side that is coached from Benji Marshall. So much was made in the media this week about his coaching style. Hindsight is yesterday, but I do look back on this one, Winnie, and I think we probably missed an opportunity here, and all punters to go, I wouldn't say hard on the Raiders or anything too silly, but you know, the thing we learned from this is, it pains me to say, but the Tigers are still a very poor football side. Whereas Ricky's Raiders did show their class in round one. The fact they didn't win a single game 13 plus margin, that is, in 2023, they've now done it twice back to back to open 2024. And arguably their spine has gotten weaker with Jack Whiten gone. They're playing a gritty style of football, but they're also offloading and taking opportunities and willing to kind of risk it a little bit and back their defense if they need to, which is something they're balancing really well at the moment. You take out minutes 24-27 of this game, and the Tigers rarely look threatening. Like, yeah, they had those two tries there, which were an awesome little passage for them of 3 minutes, but realistically, you can't look good for 3 minutes out of 80 and expect to win a contest of rugby league. The other thing the Raiders did really well here, as I touched on, they are taking opportunities, but still completing very well, and that was 90% in this game. Outside of that, as we predicted, they just competed harder on everything than the Tigers. They out-enthused the Tigers in every single way, like we said in the preview show. And ultimately, they pick up a big 20-point victory here. How did you see this one from GIO Stadium?
Yeah, I'll respond to James Graham's comments there, talking about it's a fresh team without not just Whiten, but Croker, and also Whiten had checked out. And I got this sentiment from many Raiders fans. People are like, oh, everyone's writing us off like Whiten was our best player. Whiten, they didn't feel he was quite the same player that had, you know, had won a Clive Churchill, had won a Dally, and they didn't feel he was necessarily always leading from the front. And you've got to remember, even Ricky, like, shifted him to the centres for the last few games there. You know, he wasn't necessarily the focal point of the team. So they do look super fresh and firing so far on all cylinders this season. They're up 14-0. I said this could be the type of team, because of the power game, that might prefer night games. And this was, you know, sunny afternoon, but they were relishing the daytime conditions. Many line breaks, you know, some very concerning ones for the Tigers, the way they were opened up, and, you know, the Strange try and Ethan Strange. It was strange as well by nature. Getting caught, Sullivan caught absolutely napping on the wing, and, you know, many shots of Benji looking super concerned. The Raiders seem to be playing with a real edge. You mentioned there, like, the Tigers cut it to 14-12 momentarily, but that was as good as it got for them. You know, Hosking scoring off a bomb for the second straight week. That's handy. And the Raiders just carrying on that momentum. And there is some irony there. Couldn't win a single game, like you said, last year, 13 plus two in a row to start 2024. They'll be super happy with that. And the Tigers, look, Benji's got a lot of work to do. And from, you know, from what they say, doesn't work many hours in a day to do it. So it's going to have to be efficient.
Yeah, well, he played, what, almost 350 NRL games, but the journalists want to question his work ethic, so they'll find that crazy. But Gaming Girl on Instagram says, well, she comments how great Hosking has been so far. She thinks he's been by the season. Think it's hard to push back on that. He has been absolutely awesome for them and really a player that can take over Elliot Whitehead long-term as well there. And the other one, John Pierce from YouTube, said Ethan Strange looked great taking the line on. I thought he really mixed his ball playing with his running game well. And the style that he's playing right now really suits Jamal Fogarty. It sounds strange to say, but it frees up Fogarty to play his natural game, which is organizing and kicking well, because Strange is being so dangerous beside him, which is awesome for the Raiders right now. Next up, we go to Townsville, where the Cowboys defeated the Knights by 21 points to 20. The line was set at -7.5 here in the Cowboys against the Cowboys. So it was the first game of the round where the line was not covered. It's funny because, again, it sounds like I'm tooting our own horn here, but we go back to the preview show and we both did point out the Townsville conditions and how the Cowboys have done a full preseason there and that could give them a big advantage. Well, in the end, they absolutely required every single advantage they could get. And it did seem at points the Knights were completely out of gas. Silly errors. No one running that ball up in the last 10 minutes there. Had this game have been played at McDonald Jones Stadium being the Knights' home ground, I will go on record right now and say Knights win this. And it doesn't go to Golden Point. Knights win this by a pretty solid margin. But in the end, the Cowboys preseason up in that heat absolutely helped them. Still plenty of positives to take from this from both sides. But I do think I go back to what Kevin Walters said, and I'm going to mimic it here and say Cowboys got the win. And that's the most important thing at this stage of the year. Look at the Knights last year winning. How many games did they lose by 2 points, 1 point? And we were wondering, are they going to make the finals before they went on that great run? Of course, they went on the great run, so we don't have to wonder. But what Knights fans don't want to do is get to the same stage this year and be looking back and going, oh, we finished ninth this year because we didn't get such a great run home and we lost this game by 1 point here and there. It all adds up. What I want to get to here, Winnie, is obviously I want to know what you thought of the game, but did you hear Adam O'Brien's press conference where he said, I think we'll gain a ton of fans in Newcastle from that performance. It was really gritty. I know you listened to the press conferences. Did you hear that? And what did you think of that as well?
You got to spin it positively somehow, don't you? Because that's a deflating one. And you're right. You know, you're not going to win every close game. You hope you don't lose them all either. But any game that you kind of lead by more than a converted try inside the final 10 minutes, like, you got to find a way to win those ones. When you don't, they do sting. And I think you mentioned it there. Like, yeah, it's only round two. There's 27 rounds. But I just know it's going to be a close competition, as close as any, I reckon, by the end of the year. And these are big swings. These are teams. You know, you don't know who's going to end up near each other on the ladder, but these are the type of results that can cost top four, top eight, or be the difference that makes you top four, top eight down the line. Now, this game, the way I saw it was quite similar to Broncos South. It was the Cowboys in the South Sydney role. They did everything possible to shoot themselves in the foot. If you were a Cowboys backer or a Cowboys fan, you know, anything that could go wrong for you did go wrong. You know, they would force a dropout multiple times. They couldn't get one of them back. They could not get one. The Knights were either catching it or forcing an error, or the Cowboys touched it after 9.9 metres instead of 10. Cowboys couldn't find touch from a penalty twice. They had error after error. They got done for obstructions, including a try wiped off the board. So I really feel like North Queensland should have been down a lot more. But just like the Bunnies, it really was an eerily similar game. The Cows came out second half, went bang, bang, and suddenly 12-0, same halftime score. Suddenly it's game on again. In this case, it was 12-10. However, the Knights, like Brisbane, the Knights got back in front. And, you know, in retrospect, again, should have taken Newcastle because I said, you know, it's the overreaction. But I couldn't predict how awful North Queensland was going to be in this one. And I think as well, losing Lukey, you know, early on did hurt him too, because we know the talent that he possesses. The difference in this game, it didn't finish like Souths, who were comfortably beaten. The Cowboys made Newcastle pay dearly, and this is what I spoke about earlier. You let a decent rugby league team hang around, they will make you pay. We'll get to the next game as well. Like, you've got to take your chances when you're on top. I feel like Newcastle were on top of the game for the majority. But, of course, just letting the Cowboys – the Cowboys were always going to throw the kitchen sink at the end. You've got nothing to lose. You're down. And, you know, it's the finest margins that decide this game. You know, I think of a point, there's under 5 minutes to go. The Cowboys were barely even getting out of their own half. You're thinking, how are they going to conjure a try up here? They throw it around. The ball goes to ground. And Elliott, who had a double and had a great game, dives on it, just can't quite secure it. It's a repeat set. And the Cowboys scored off that set. Knights were clearly fatigued, as you said, in the conditions. And it's a little, it was a Townsend rubber in behind for Nanai, right?
Nanai. Yes.
He scores the try, but you think that that won them the game. But then Val Holmes, this will be one that he won't really want to remember. Yeah. He had three errors, which, you know, three errors for one player, an outside back, no less. You know, he's pretty bad. He had a disallowed try when he thought he'd put him in front. He had another chance where he should have scored, and it was a hell of a tackle on him. Think Jed Cartwright, try saver. He missed the conversion for the win. He missed the penalty in the first half. He missed a field goal for the win. You know, it doesn't matter probably in the end, because the Cowboys, as we know, while they didn't win it there, the Knights dropped the ball again with a chance for a field goal. We go to extra time, and it's a Townsend field goal ultimately on the back of a Dearden break. But, yeah, I just can't help but feel you look at, like, so easily North Queensland and Newcastle could be 1-1. But instead it's the Cowboys who will feel fantastic knowing what they're capable of, but that they won ugly when they didn't play well. And the Knights, you can say O'Brien can spin it positively, but they're 0-2. They've got the Storm next week, and then they've got a trip to New Zealand the week after that. Like, you have to be hurting because that's a tough one to swallow.
Very, very tough draw coming up for the Knights. We go to YouTube for some comments. Jeff says he couldn't be more prouder of the Cowboys' performance, and Ryan says he was on Cows -3.5, and that hurt. Yep. I mean, you just take away a few of their silly errors, and they probably would have won this one by a bigger margin. They were, I think they went into half time at like 40% completion. So very, very poor there, needless to say. Let's go to the game that is certain to feature a highlight that'll be on the NRL, I guess, highlights reels for the next 10 years, maybe more. Storm defeat the Warriors 30-26. The line was set at -7.5 against the Storm here. So in back-to-back games this round, the line was not covered. We both liked Warriors at the line this round, though I don't believe we gave it out as an official tip. I got a little bit greedy with my personal bets here. I took the Warriors head-to-head. There was too much value there for me to ignore. I really thought their forward pack was going to take over the Melbourne Storms that seemed a little bit short. And then, of course, in this game, Christian Welch did suffer a head injury, and he was ruled out. So then you really think, okay, well, now Storm will be tested. They were tested all right, and somehow this champion side managed to respond. And long-time viewers of this show will know I kind of have this rule that I just never underestimate the Melbourne Storm, because they always just shock me in some way that they've never shocked me before. And they did it again in this one when I was underestimating them. Look, I'll be honest, I was completely ready to cash my ticket with 3 minutes to go. But alas, rugby league reminds us why it is the greatest game of all. No one is going to remember the Warriors ticker they shown in the second half, or how well they defended for majority of it. They are just going to remember that try from Xavier Coates that was absolutely spectacular. Possibly the greatest rugby league try I have ever seen. Warriors were the better side over 80 minutes for me. I know that sounds strange because they lost, but that's not an insult to the Storm either, Winnie, because it just shows how classy they are, that when these little half opportunities, and I won't even say Coates was a half opportunity, it was a 1/10 opportunity. Somehow they nail the execution, they nail their chances and opportunities, and they down the Warriors here, who will be absolutely heartbroken by this one. How did you see it? And do you think that Coates try was the greatest you've ever seen of all time?
Given the context, I mean, that's the greatest match-winning try I've ever seen, for sure. And even just among all tries, one of the greatest you've ever seen. Like, unbelievable. This was the second of two awesome back-to-back games on Saturday, where I will say both underdogs were on top for longer. I feel both should have won. But again, the class of the home team that was just not quite put away was able to prevail. Now, I'll get to the Warriors, but just to correct you there, that they were a best bet. The line was 6.5, 7.5. I took the 1.5 tries handicap. In any case, they lost by a try in the end, as we know, but that try didn't you know, we still won. And, you know, we're in front by a try, so we're late in the game. So we're pretty comfortable there. I felt all along that this was a really even game and couldn't understand why the Warriors were getting such a good start. And Wade Egan was ruled out. So you lose like such a key piece and you still should have won. It shows that it was a really good bet. I had my doubts about Melbourne coming into the year. Now they're sitting pretty here at 2-0. But again, it could so easily be 1-1 and more people would maybe see where I'm coming from. But let me say something positive about Melbourne. How many teams in the whole competition could come up with 12 points in the final 3 minutes to win a game against a good opponent when you're missing your best attacking player? Like, Penrith couldn't do that with no Cleary. Brisbane isn't coming back, but I don't believe if you don't have Walsh, or, you know, Reynolds, could the Cowboys do it without Drinky? You know, it goes on. Like, the Storm don't have Munster. It does show the heart of a champion that they could come back and do that. As I said, greatest match-winning try you've ever seen. Like, just absolute perfection that they swing it. This is after they've scored the outside-in ball to Pappenhausen with under 3 minutes left just to cut it to a one-score game. And to talk about fine margins again, because the Storm weren't trying to score with their final set. They were trying to get in range for a two-point field goal, which they attempted. It was charged down. Now, that can go anywhere. That can not get charged down. Maybe it's extra time. Maybe it misses, and then Warriors win. Maybe it's partially charged down. If the Warriors get on that ball, they win. No, but it happened to go back to Melbourne just to give them a chance. But then they were inside the 20. Had to go for the win, but putting it through the hands and just the timing of the jump by Coates, the leap, because DWZ had him covered. DWZ didn't get sucked into Smith. He would have felt he could not have done any more. In fact, I saw one comment by JK that was like, maybe DWZ sprinting across and hitting Coates almost gave him like a tiny bit of extra airtime because he was kind of under him when he hit him. Like, but the athleticism, because you say, like, he jumps from 6 meters out. Like, what's the world long jump records? What, like 9 meters? This is like running, holding a footy while getting hit in the air and being able to plant it. Just absolutely phenomenal. It's one of the reasons we love this game, you know. And even I can appreciate it. And believe me, I really wanted to see the Wars win. So I was gutted. And I know there's a lot of really hurting Warriors fans out there right now. Maybe a few watching the show. And like I saw a comment before, all you can say is it takes one of the greatest tries of all time to beat you. I think the Warriors can take a lot of confidence out of the game, even though they're in that 0-2 hole. The thing is, the Warriors have just been used to going down to Melbourne and getting pumped. You know, every year the record's been atrocious. But go back to past years, you know, Melbourne has been top four, top two, or best team in the comp the last, you know, 6-7 years in that range. And the Warriors haven't been thereabouts. This is different. You know, they don't fear Melbourne. They felt they could win the game, and honestly, they should have. After falling down as 18-6, the Warriors, and, you know, they had a try disallowed in there, they dominated from that point onwards and, you know, built the lead to beyond a converted try late. And it's just, you say they should have repelled Melbourne, but, I mean, they did everything, but it's probably better rather than to rue the side that lost it to just celebrate the victor, because it's one of the most outstanding wins and match-winning moments you ever will see.
Yeah, I would go as far to say that in terms of all sports worldwide, we talk buzzer beaters in the NBA, as James says there from Facebook. You know, we talk last-second touchdowns in the NFL, etc. The only thing that could have, you know, really heightened this is undisputable if this was a finals game or a grand final. But, yeah, in the context of what needed to occur to win the game, the fact we've never really seen someone in rugby league jump 6 meters and still put it down, it was absolutely incredible. I just want to retract. I actually forgot in our preview show, I tipped the Warriors plus and you tipped the tries plus 1.5. So we did both get that despite the Warriors losing there. But ultimately, they suffer their 15th straight loss against the Melbourne Storm. You know, I'm going to tip them next time they play the Storm, man. They got that close. I'm going to tip them again. I don't know when it is but I'm going to tip them.
Is that the record? Between those two.
Storm have beat them 15 times in a row now. Yep.
It's funny because years ago, the Warriors were like the hoodoo team of the Storm, got them in a couple of finals and stuff. And I remember because they often play on Anzac Day and there's been some years where it's just been a mismatch. And that's why I said, like, I wasn't reading into that record at all, because there's been games where the Warriors have gone into Melbourne and they knew they were on a hiding to nothing. You know, it's very different this year. But, I don't believe there is a comment there about a hoodoo and stuff. Yeah, those are pretty extreme numbers. I won't go that far. You know, there's many factors at play. It comes down to an inch. If Xavier's left hand is an inch lower, you know, goal kicking hurt as well, because Johnson wasn't taking the kicks, and the Warriors scored a couple of penalty goals but missed some conversions. You know, it all factors in. But at the end of the day, just celebrate. Yeah, celebrate the moment that concluded that one.
Spot on. Celebrate the history we got to watch as rugby league fans there with that incredible try. We'll move on to Sunday, where the Sea Eagles defeated the Roosters 21-14. Line was set at -1.5 for the Roosters, so an outright upset here for the home side in the Manly Sea Eagles, and I just thought the Roosters were poor. My key takeaway, and I don't want to be too critical because I did bet head-to-head on the Roosters as well, and I think sometimes when you bet on a team, it can kind of influence your reaction and how you reflect on their performance. You know, you're more critical of referee calls, you're more critical of particular players' errors, etc. But I really thought the Roosters took completely unnecessary risks in their own half, put themselves under an immense amount of pressure for no reason at all. Like, they were down at some stages by 6 points, coming out of their own end on second tackle, and they're trying to pull off backline plays where you'd think they're down by 50 in a grand final. Crazy. To their credit, though, they did defend extremely well in the first half. But in the second half, their responsibility to care for the football and care about possession didn't change. Their mindset remained the same. It seemed like a side that was intent to score and like they were chasing a much larger margin than they were. So very, very poor. As I said, 19 errors, 4 set restarts, 9 penalties, 41% possession. This was a tough watch as a Roosters better in this game. And I will say it was a far cry from the Roosters that we saw in Las Vegas, who were a lot better than what we saw today. Were you as frustrated as I was watching it, or do you think I'm being a bit too critical?
No, I think you're perfectly fair. And what you're talking about there is confirmation bias, that if we back a team and we think, like, I backed the Roosters and they were a best bet today and we needed them for the mixed matchup, but because of those 12 late points by Storm, we had 30 on the board to chase down. So first things first, I wanted the Roosters to win the game. We talk a little bit about closing line value. You know, we got them $1.82 to win. They closed the game, what, $1.70 or lower, but it counts for very little. And I'm just happy to say, not happy, but willing to say I got it wrong. Because if you watch a game and you just feel like whenever anything goes right, yeah, I called this. And whenever anything goes wrong, oh, that's unlucky. Like, they made a mistake, or that was fluky, or the ref, you know, then you'll think that you're a genius and you should win every bet. And of course, that's not going to be the case. You're not going to get every game right. And I pride myself on the fact that we do the recap and I can be objective and I can admit where I got it wrong and learn from it week to week, hopefully make better bets in the future. I want to respond to a couple of comments. I think Kyle's kind of breaking down how he's seeing the Roosters. Roosters' discipline never gave them a chance to build any pressure, literally leading the comp in errors every year. Feel like unless the Roosters' forward pack is absolutely cooking the other team's middle, Kiri Walker partnership doesn't work. Neither has a decent long-range kicking game. Now, on that, we'll have to monitor Luke Kiri, whether he's back next week, whether he's back in weeks to come, because he suffered yet another concussion. I just thought at times Manly starved the Roosters of the ball, which did make it difficult. But when the Roosters had it, they were just far from sharp. They spilled the ball at key times. You know, there were great signs for Manly that played very positively again, willing to shift it and play attacking footy. I felt like Manly got a lot of, got some fortune on fifth or sixth tackle. It's like whether it be a kick, they get a result from a Roosters error, or it's like there was a crusher tackle called on a sixth tackle where, of course, everyone's going to flock to the ball and squeeze in. Like, there were many times where I felt like, And multiple times where the Manly scored because they got a six again offside, or Lindsay Collins was holding on just too long on the final tackle of a set when they'd been defending six straight on their line. And sure enough, Manly scored on the back of a couple of those. But you can also say Manly could have put on more points. You know, Brooks scores a try, but his boot just is on the sideline. Olakau'atu scores a try, but they find a bobble in there. So I can't complain, honestly. And the Roosters, only points in the second half are a Dom Young intercept try. Not even a clean intercept, but he gets a mitt to it, pops up, Teddy catches it, returns it to Young, and Young scores. So there was no kind of legit try by the Roosters in the whole second half when they had to chase the game. So they were definitely well below par. And I was disappointed most of all in the Roosters forward pack. Like even the likes of Radley, I thought was the best forward on the field in Vegas. I didn't see their middles dominating. You know, can you put it all down to the loss of Lenu? I don't feel that you can. So then I come away from this game gone, but how good are Manly? You know, I didn't have them inside the top eight, but they've been pretty damn impressive after 2 weeks. And, you know, this is a top-heavy team in terms of salary cap with 800K in Schuster, who's playing reserve grade as well. You know, you really happy returns on the Brooks signing and the first game at Brooksvale. I'll throw it back to you in terms of, like, how much of you reevaluated Manly, Clarkey, but also like to know in the comments, like, what are people making of them? Because it may be a side that I've grossly underestimated.
Well, to the comments, Pidgey004 from Instagram says there is a lot of hatred towards Manly. I thought it was a tough game to watch. I'm a Manly fan, but I thought we looked decent. And I absolutely agree with that. I think Manly look really good at this stage of the year. But the reasons why I had the missing top eight wasn't due to their skill level when they've got their best 17 on the park. I think their best 17 is awesome. Where I do get concerned with Manly is if they do have injuries, particularly to middle forwards. Like if you go and pop Taniela Paseka or Jake Trbojevic out of that side, I think they really struggle just by losing one middle forward. I'm not sure they've got the depth over a full season. Then I go to the origin period where players like DCE and Turbo are almost certainly not going to be there and will miss games this year with the NRL's new rule where you can't play twice in the same week. So my fundamental reasons why I had Manly missing the eight, I haven't got an answer for that yet. So I can't change my opinion, but I have been impressed with them and I probably didn't have them starting 2-0. So I have to be impressed with that. In actual fact, I haven't tipped them. So yeah, I had them starting 0-2. So they've definitely proven me wrong. And they've definitely surprised me, Winnie. But I can't change up on my missing the eight prediction just yet. I've got to see a little bit more footy and their depth tested a little bit first. Let's move on to the final game of the round. It was your boys, the Dolphins, defeating the Dragons 38-0. Really great start by the Dolphins here. Like, this is a side, and this is what Wayne Bennett can do. Not every week, but certainly games that matter. You know, Suncorp last year, first game in Redcliffe last year, et cetera, et cetera. They came out with intent. They tried to make things happen around them, and every single player just had energy. Players that, like, we don't really look at as superstars, Kurt Donohue, Max Plath, these are guys that are, like, fringe first graders. The energy they brought to that football field, they might as well have been superstars, Tom Trbojevic, James Tedesco, etc. They were bloody awesome. Whereas for the Dragons, coming off a big win against the Titans, it's almost like they rocked up with the attitude that, oh, we're a better side this year. We're going to roll them. We're going to win this. They didn't have that same energy and intent about everything. Like, their first contact in the tackle was weaker. There wasn't people searching for runs. Like when they got a roll in against the Titans, every player was like, give me the ball. The halves were like, yeah, let's get it wide early. Here, you kind of could have thrown a tea towel over them at times. They just were out on their feet early. A completely different side to what we saw. In that first half, the Dolphins did lose Cody Nikorima and Jeremy Marshall-King to head injury assessments. Nikorima did fail his. They still managed to hold the Dolphins scoreless. Why I thought that was impressive, you had players switching to hooker, switching to 5-8, combinations changing all across the park, and they still defended very, very well there. The bookies had this as a pick 'em coming into this, and it ended with the largest winning margin this round and the largest winning margin in Dolphins history. So that is what you call, ladies and gentlemen, rugby league. You know what I mean? Like, only rugby league can serve up a result like this. I will say I predicted in the preview show, the Dragons would dip in form. That's what we saw there. And it's a tough one for me to say, Winnie, right? Because I'm a Titans fan. So when I say my team sucked in round one as much as the Dragons look good, everyone just thinks this guy's salty. He's not seeing it right. But I genuinely did believe what I was saying. I wasn't saying it out of a place of anger or disappointment. I thought we made the Dragons look pretty good. And 1 week later, I hate to say it, but it seems to be that was pretty spot on there. I did put a bet on this one as well right before, mate. I went, I was between Hammer and Asako anytime tries. I went Asako. So when Hammer scored first, I'm like, oh, I missed that one. And I had the Dolphins head to head. So of course, Asako scored the second try there. So put my money where my mouth is on this one. Got it right. Happy with that because it's tough to get any game of rugby league right, let alone get it right 9 years in a row like you have. But how did you see this one? No bets from yourself. So just your boys getting a good old-fashioned win. Doesn't get much better, does it?
Well, it would have got better if I had a bet on it. Like Ryan comments there, bet the Finns using Winnie's teachings. I had other people messaging, surprised you didn't have the Finns this week, like as a best bet. Like that would be the logical spot to take them. As I said, 28-4, the Dragons couldn't have looked any better against the Titans. Dolphins get thumped. Dolphins concede 43 points against North Queensland, can't tackle. And I should have been on them, but to, you know, in my defense, okay, like I definitely considered it. And in fact, I tipped the Dolphins. Like I thought it was close to 50-50. I tipped the Dolphins. I just couldn't quite make them a best bet to say I was, you know, 60% confident. And you the same. You also tipped the Finns. It annoys me though. Yes, that should have been a best bet. But like in retrospect, Lemuelu was a big out when you had Leilua, Luciano Leilua, all the L's, and Blake Laurie both back in for the Dragons. On top of that, Sean O'Sullivan out. And you couldn't ignore that there might be a massive culture change with the Dragons. And therefore, they might really be a better team than what we thought, what we envisioned them to be, because it had been such a dejected joint for many years with so little success. So you had to at least appreciate that was a possibility. But Flano, I mean, the nerve to come out after they beat the Titans and say, oh, people have been writing us off all summer saying we're going to finish bottom four, or I don't know if he said bottom four or last, you know, but he said it won't happen. Well, you came out and you played like by far the worst team in the comp. So maybe you spoke too soon, Flano. So again, well done if you did find the Finns and if you did back them. You know, I even put a multi out on Dabble and I won every leg except the Roosters. And I even had like the Finns at $2 as my final leg. What a sweet, you know, anchor leg that could have been, but it didn't come down to that. So I get nothing to show for the fact that I thought the Finns would be the play here, because if I'm not confident enough to back it, certainly can't take the credit for it. But I do think that, you know, the Finns' defense, after all the criticism, to concede 43 last week and then none this week, that's what stood out to me most of all. There were times where they had to defend. Like, it wasn't a romp from start to finish. It was only like 10-0 at halftime. If you concede first after halftime, as we've seen other teams this round, you know, Brisbane was up double digits, then it was level. The Storm was up 12 points, then they were down 8 later in the game. You know, the Knights, they were up at least 8 points, if not more. The Cowboys ended up winning. You know, so you've got to put teams away once again. And had the Dragons been able to, like, score off the back of, you know, that Ben Hunt 40-20, and then they got a penalty after that, it could have been game on. So you've got to credit the Finns' defense. And then I also noted, like the likes of Plath. And I thought Katoa was excellent too and will hold his spot. So it's funny because you talked about you didn't really believe in the Dragons this week because you thought the Titans were trash in round one. You do want to try and you do want to draw the form lines. Like I was saying, some of these teams might not be as good as we think. The opponent might have been poor, or the other way around. Some of these teams might not be bad at all. It was just a tough game. Like let's say Cronulla, New Zealand in round one, you shouldn't have taken much away from either of them. They're both good, and it was a tight, low-scoring game. The problem with drawing the form lines is that would assume every team is at the same level every week, but because teams fluctuate so much with their own performances, even if you're right, you know, and a team did have a really impressive win, they can still be a yo-yo the next week. So, you know, that's the challenge. That's why the games aren't played on paper. That's why it's not easy to predict. We're sitting here after two rounds, 5-2 on best bets. So I should be happy, but I have to admit, I am annoyed because once again, I feel like I could have done a little bit better.
Yeah, I've missed a few opportunities. But one thing that I thought of there, and I know you're huge on this, is the coaches' press conferences, right? And, you know, we both thought here that the Dragons rocked up with the wrong attitude, as if they were better than they were. I wonder, you know, because culture does start with the coach. Did they read too much into the coach's comments of, oh, we're a new team? You know, as we've previously read into Jason Demetriou saying, oh, we're looking to build our season. So because he was using that terminology, we were both more keen on the Broncos. And stuff like that. Very interesting to weigh that all up and consider as well the mental side of rugby league, I suppose. But yeah, this one, a night to remember for Dolphins fans, their biggest ever victory, 38-0 over the Dragons, and a really fun way to close out round two of the NRL season. At this point, we will close the show and say thank you very much to everyone who has been here with us for our NRL Round 2 recap. We absolutely appreciate you, no matter whether you're with us live or listening later as a podcast. We thank you dearly. Our next show will be Wednesday, 5:30 p.m. New South Wales time, to preview Round 3, hand out some best bets, and hopefully continue to improve on that 5-2 best bet record that we do have. with that in mind, Winnie, over to yourself for those famous last words.
I think your muscle memory took over, mate. You said Wednesday, but 2024, Tuesday.
Yes.
Sorry, it's a day sooner. We'll be ready. We'll be ready. Oof. We'll be coming with more best bets for sure. So have a great start to your week. Until then, thanks for joining us. And Lego.